My name's Aaron Rosetta. I'm with Paper Counts, which is a newly formed little campaign, if you will, that I've started to try and encourage Georgia voters in the upcoming election to vote on paper ballots. I think that most everybody here would know the reason for wanting to do that. Is there anybody here who thinks that we can run our elections with computer systems that do not produce any physical evidence of our votes? Okay, so we know the problem. And I appreciate you being here, by the way. It's very disappointing to see so many empty seats here, and yet at a room I was helping run the other day for a kind of a hack television show called MSTK 3000 or MST3K there. Okay. Mystery Science Theater. It was a hack gimmick where people would sit and the guys would sit and lambaste old movies. It's now been off the air for 10 years and yet it packed a room of 800 people to capacity. So, you know, this is really, really one of the core problems is a lack of public involvement. And it's one of the reasons that we're here trying to rattle the doors a little bit, and hopefully we're seeing some change in that, and that people are getting starting to get involved in politics again, and starting to understand the importance to their world that they have legitimate elections and they elect officials who represent their needs, not the needs of special interests. So there's not much point, like I say, in going back over the reasons why we're doing this, but it is important to talk about some of the actions that we've been taking. Both John and Defenders of Democracy, which I've been working with also for a number of years, since 2002. Some other people that we've been associated with doing the work, most importantly and most significantly, is Voter GA. Voter GA, I was happy to find an email when I went back to get my stuff together this morning for this program, find an email from Voter GA. Voter GA is a group that was formed to bring a lawsuit against the state for the use of zero evidence election systems. And we now have a court date set up for a hearing where they're going to hear oral arguments in the case. The case has been in progress for, is it 2 years now, John?
2 years.
Yeah, for about 2 years now. We feel we've been very successful in presenting our case, and we're going to go through the counts in the case and kind of use that as a launching point to talk about how these machines got installed in the state, which is itself a nightmare story of privatization of essential public services, and some of the laws that these machines already break, some of the existing laws that we feel these machines are in violation of, both federal statutes and our own state constitution. So there are several counts there talking about that. This action is coming up just next week. Next Monday is when they're hearing these oral arguments. If you're really interested in this cause, you can show up in the courtroom and have a presence there. I would encourage you to go to voterga.org, look at the information there, and see how you can see if there's any way you can take next Monday off after being here all week to show up to sit in a courtroom. It would if we have bodies in the seats, it helps really make an impact and a show of force. And I think you'll find the process interesting at the very least. The counts of the lawsuit that will be argued are several. There are several that were originally in the case, and then there's several that were added as a part of the discovery process, where two parties go back and forth and provide further research of the legalities. Machine accuracy is the first count. Machine accuracy. Georgia law requires that that electronic voting machines record correctly and accurately every vote cast at the time they are used. No procedure was ever implemented to ensure that the machines record the votes accurately on election night when they are used. And this is really, really a fact. The problem is we've put a kind of a corporation, the special interests of a corporation, in between the vote and the counting of the vote. There's a large black hole there now. And I remember the Secretary of State in hearings when we were trying to get some legislation to at least require a paper audit trail for the systems. She was up there telling the state representatives that with computers there's no computers don't have any motives. Computers don't have any special agenda. Well, no, computers don't, but the people who program them certainly do, that it's just clear. Slow down, get organized here. Clear that there is an agenda there, and we're putting a big black hole of that agenda in between the voter and the counting of their votes. Recount ability. State law provides conditions when candidates are entitled to a recount of the votes. Georgia e-voting, zero evidence voting, made recounts impossible because it removed all direct physical evidence of voter intent from our elections. Voter verified ballots were replaced by voter inaccessible electronic records. Only reprints of previous unverifiable results are now possible. So basically, if you had a close race, you used to be able to contest it, and you would get people in a room from both sides, from all interested parties, in there manually counting physical evidence and making sure that that physical evidence was tallied correctly. Now it's basically you hire again, you pay for the Diebold technicians to come back in at great taxpayer expense. To go through and basically print out the same results that they handed you the last time. Whatever results their software manufactured the first time, you get handed again. So it makes recounts really, truly impossible. And it's put up a huge barrier to actually verifying the election because a couple times when recounts have come up, the states have tried to put this private corporation cost of recounts back on the candidate who's calling for the recount. So to try and recount Ohio and challenge the 2004 election, was it the Green Party candidate, John, who challenged the Ohio election with the recount?
Initially, yes.
Yeah, okay. But they put up this huge barrier of like, okay, yeah, but you got to come up with like, what was it, $100,000?
A large sum,
yeah. Yeah. At least 100,000, if not more, so that he could actually have a recount and see if there were enough write-ins to justify him getting federal election funding and things like that. And this is another state that heavily uses the zero-evidence electronic voting systems. You also note that there was a lot of another interesting side effect is in Ohio there were huge lines outside the polling place. They were saying, look, isn't it great? All these people are going out to vote. Well, the reason there were huge lines is because in selected precincts they didn't have enough machines for the people to vote on. So they were able to jury rig the whole system because they weren't using simple paper ballots to vote on because they had these complex machines. They controlled the distribution of the machines so that the poor neighborhoods had huge lines going out the door and the wealthy neighborhoods did not. I mean, this is part of the games that these election officials and the corporations that they're in bed with are playing. Ballot requirement. The Georgia Constitution requires all elections to be conducted by ballot. When e-voting was implemented in 2002, Georgia law was modified to state that elections shall be conducted by ballot except when voting machines are used. State law cannot override a constitutional requirement, is our claim in this count. Elections must be conducted by ballot, not electronic record. And this is probably the key in this suit, but we've actually gotten a concession to several of the counts already. This one's, real obvious. It's constitutionally required that we will have a ballot, and yet they tried to modify the law so that they will not be conducted by ballot except you know, whenever the voting machines are used, whenever there's an electronic record involved. And trying to call the electronic record a ballot is one of the schemes they've tried to pull to get around that. And they've used a lot of language to make sure that whenever they're talking about using the touchscreen zero evidence systems, that they pretend that, what's on the screen is the ballot. But there is no actual physical record that that ballot gets processed in every way, shape, and form by the software before it gets to anywhere where it's counted. So there's nothing legitimate in any claim that that would be a ballot. It's our feeling, anyway. People participation. The Georgia Constitution defines our method of voting as elections by the people. Currently, the people cannot see the selections on their own ballots, cannot confirm that their ballots were cast, and cannot participate in the counting of the votes to determine election results. All critical functions of elections by the people were unconstitutionally removed from the people, is the claim of that count. Any questions as I'm going along here? Is this a good thing to kind of review and see what's going on? Yeah.
I might be jumping ahead a little bit here, but are you against getting rid of the electronic voting altogether, or if we had a system where it would produce a paper ballot?
If we had a... Yeah,
for example, we had a touchscreen machine, and we could use the electronic record for speed, but it also produced a receipt.
It's never a receipt. It's never a receipt. There are no receipts in that, and it's very... It's the enemy's language to use that term, because they try and trivialize the fact that that needs to be the ballot record. But anyway, I'm going to...
But if it produced a paper record of what you voted in a human readable form,
mm-hmm.
that we could then put in a ballot box
right.
and use for a recount,
mm-hmm.
would that be something that would be acceptable, or...
Our view is that what would be acceptable is if the computer prints out a paper ballot and that paper ballot is the ballot of record and maybe a separate machine is used to scan that. The reason is the minute you have electronic counts, then you've got this discrepancy and you have these arguments that, oh, well, the voter can't actually touch their paper ballot, their paper record, because then they might forget to put it in the ballot box and forget they didn't vote or get confused. And then, you know, there'll be a discrepancy between that and the electronic record. So, you know, don't actually use the paper to audit anything, because, you know, is what they're trying to argue. And so they have these scam machines where they have paper rolls where the voter can validate it afterwards. They're totally inadequate to the process. You really need to make the paper ballot the physical record. I'm a computer guy. I mean, everybody I know who hates these machines is a computer guy. They understand, yeah, yeah.
I agree with you, but how do you address the desire to have the results as immediately as possible?
Are elections about immediate results, or elections about accuracy and fact and evidence? You know.
I won't argue with you there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
The news cycle, and everybody wants to know as soon as the polls close.
Most of the legitimate democracies in the world still use paper ballots. They count those paper ballots by hand in the precincts at the close of polls, the way it's supposed to be done. Yeah, and they get the results by the next morning. So if I'm asleep at 4 a.m. when Fox News calls the election for their cousin, okay? I'm asleep at 4 a.m. when that happens. So, you know, I can wait till the next morning to get my election results. That is part of what has been used to drive this, though, that whole media cycle. Oh, we got to have instant results. We got to let the people know immediately what's happened. That myth that we've got to do that. But elections aren't about immediate results. Elections are about accuracy. And the only way to guarantee that accuracy, because of the nature of voting, it's not like a bank transaction where you get a receipt, you know, because that receipt is an agreement between both parties, and both parties know what took place, okay? With anonymous balloting, one party can't know what I know, right? You need to protect that so that people can't extort me for votes to get my vote, can't pay me to get my vote. So you need to protect that anonymity, and as long as that's in place, then you have to have a system where you have physical evidence of that vote so you can accurately track it down. That's our stand.
Verified paper ballots.
Yes.
Either absentee voting or early voting.
Yes. Early voting in this state is done on the electronic machines. You go to the precinct, and now the data that is totally corruptible is left on the machines for a week before. So it's worse to do early voting on the machines. There are two methods. Both of them are described in this. As far as Georgia state law goes, you do have the right in this state now to vote absentee without any excuse whatsoever. So you just say, I want an absentee ballot. You apply for your absentee ballot, and you can mail it in. My recommendation in the bottom of this sheet is that you actually use this as a form of protest. You're voting on an absentee ballot. You don't have to have an excuse. So what you do to make sure that the chain of custody from your hand to the hand of the counters is minimized, you know, doesn't have a big U.S. Postal Service hole in there. So you guarantee that you walk it in to the registrar's office for your county on the day of the election. Instead of going to the polling place, you go to the registrar's office, hand them your paper ballot. And that will also serve as a form of protest, and it's part of what this campaign is about. It is a decent way to do it, because at least you have some evidence of your vote that way. If you don't do that, then you have no evidence of your vote. It's electronic. You've basically handed it over to the Diebold people. I'd like to continue with a couple more of these, and then have John go up for a minute.
Okay.
All right. Equal protection. And this is where the absentee, this leads in from the absentee balloting, actually. One of our client counts is that equal protection. The Georgia Constitution states no person shall be denied the equal protection of the laws. Well, Georgia absentee voters cast ballots on standard paper that can be verified, audited, and recounted. Georgia Election Day voters do not have those same privileges and are denied equal protection of the state's of the laws stated above. Specific, I'm not familiar with that word, finualities exist in ballot verification, recounts, investigation of discrepancies, fraud detection, and producing evidence for contested elections. This goes back to that, yes, vote absentee. Vote absentee of the state, because it's the only way you're going to get any evidence of your vote. Do what you can to protect that chain of custody so they don't have it, they aren't sitting on it for weeks, giving, if you're a conspiracy theorist, then you're worried about paper fraud. Because I tried to suggest this to a lady who was out there registering voters the other day, actually yesterday, and she goes, oh, but they'll tear it up. They'll tear up your absentee ballot. Well, okay, then we're going to have hundreds of people tearing up ballots in hundreds of locations to make a significant difference. With electronic voting, it takes one corrupt or fallible piece of software to do all the work for you. So, who's the conspiracy nuts here? The people who are worried about paper fraud are the ones who are worried, who are the conspiracy nuts. Because we've heard it enough coming back at us. Oh, you're just a bunch of conspiracy nuts because you understand the technology. No, we understand the technology, and we know that it doesn't take a conspiracy to corrupt an electronic election, not without any evidence. The original lawsuit also claims the 2006 audit trail project is unconstitutional and illegal. This is one where the voting machine companies, Diebold, tried to introduce the paper roll. Record type of system. Now you have to understand that there's only three main voting machine companies in the country. All of them are in communication. All of them work from insider aspects, basically doing regulatory capture on the people who are supposed to regulate them, whining and dining all the election officials, throwing big corporate money. To try and convince them that, this is the way that you should vote and to sell them their products. Where was I going with that? Diebold, in response to some of these allegations, and there's actually all the companies actually do produce a paper roll version. But it's interesting that when you see the procedures that they put in place to audit the actual election, they are so cumbersome and so awkward that they're totally impractical. It's almost as if, well, it's not almost as if, it they do. They intentionally design these systems to be so awkward to use, to audit the results that they're providing, that and it's a way to protect their stand. Their motive is greed. They want to make money. They want to establish a monopoly like they have in Georgia. The Diebold Corporation has established a complete monopoly over our voting systems in Georgia. And what better way to protect that than never being able to show that your machines are broken? Never having any evidence in the system to show that these machines don't work. Okay? So they've intentionally designed these paper trail systems, these parallel audit systems, to be as unusable as possible, because they don't want to be able to us to be able to audit their elections. They want to say everything went perfectly, and they want to maintain complete control. It's in there, so it's not. It may not even be bad motivation. It's just greed is their motivation, and there's no compromise with that.
You said there were two other companies besides Diebold.
Sequoia, and the third one is
ESS.
Is it, just to follow up on that, at least if memory serves, Diebold's employees are significant Republican contributors? Are the other two also very partisan one way or the other in their contributions?
I think Diebold's been the one that's been shown the worst to be very partisan.
There certainly is, people who've been following the story recall the president of Diebold vowing to deliver Ohio in 2004. However, if you look at the ES&S Corporation, which is documented pretty well on this DVD called Invisible Ballots, their corporation was controlled by a man named Chuck Hagel, who subsequently got himself elected as senator from Nebraska on his own machines without any public disclosure that he had submitted that the votes were being counted on his company's equipment. If you have a look at this amazing bit of documentary work that came out about 7 years too late from Dan Rather, this came out in August 2007, he has found the source of the problems in Palm Beach County, which, as you all may recall, there were the problems with the hanging chads there. Well, it seems that no one seemed to get an interview at that time with the people who actually manufactured those punch cards. And Dan Rather has got seven employees of that punch card printing plant being interviewed here, where they all testify, and let's say in the paper quality control department, they broke with some 20 years of standards that the company had and used inferior quality paper, specifically for the run of the Palm Beach County ballots. And then in the portion of the plant where they would score the cards so that the chads would punch out, and they're lined up, and they would line up with the Votatronic machine. They deliberately misaligned those cards so that if you tried to punch through your selection, it was likely just to tear the card. You weren't punching through a square, you were punching through a space between the squares.
Yeah.
So this and so all these companies have shown, and in Sequoia's case, you can't necessarily prove they were trying to do anything more than get rid of customers for their punch card systems and switch them over to these electronic systems which they designed, which no one was interested in buying because they were outrageously expensive. And with the fiasco in 2000 and the subsequent passage of the Help America Vote Act, which subsidized the purchase of these electronic paperless machines, you could say they were just looking out for their bottom line by and simultaneously confounding and muddling the Palm Beach County's election. They certainly had plenty of other counties to choose from in doing this tactic, but for whatever reason, it was a heavily Democratic county. And I just would like to say at this point that Defenders of Democracy is a truly nonpartisan organization, and we have had people who have fought us tooth and nail from both parties at different points in our fight for paper ballots and transparency and auditable elections.
Mm-hmm. Here in Georgia, it was the Democrats who actually installed these machines. Kathy Cox was a so-called Democrat when she bought into these machines. And, you know, and how tight these people are in bed with the voting machine companies is really frightening. There's a lot of revolving door policy where you're serving in public service, where you get to make decisions about which voting machines are used, and then you get hired by the voting machine company. In this case, in Georgia, it was Kathy Rogers, who was the election director assigned by Kathy Cox. She was one of the biggest proponents and one of the biggest mouthpieces in the hearings for, you know, trying to defend and keep these machines from getting a paper audit trail and such. Secretary of State's office has gone and went to the Republicans. She quit her job as election director and immediately went to work in a very high-level position with the Diebold Corporation. So, I mean, these conflicts of interest and the corruption that's opened up by this kind of proprietary closed-source system is just frightening.
And it wasn't only our former Secretary of State, second in command, who took a position with Diebold. Her press secretary ended up also taking a position with Diebold, and now is just in a story that came out on the 21st of last month. He is stating that there have been software problems not only in the individual voting machines themselves, but in the servers at the county level, which accumulate the totals for any given county that, in some cases, isn't even using Diebold equipment, but they're nonetheless using GEMS, GEMS software and servers.
Is that the report from the GOP official that was circulated by the Atlanta Dems?
That's a different story.
Yeah. We have yet to find a positive report from any independent evaluation of these systems to come out. I mean, nobody's been able to report positively in any independent evaluation or attempt to hack these machines.
Do we know for certain, other than, guarantee of a job, what was, I've heard Kathy Cox speak on this,
We have no evidence of bribery. The situation is such that it's much more a matter of corporate coercion. The only voices she gets to hear are the Diebold voting machine companies' voices, you know, or Sequoia's or ES&S. And they do have very heavily focused PR campaigns where they'll throw parties for the entire state election officials. You know, they have an annual meeting. Well, Diebold was there throwing the big wine and dine party, sponsoring all the alcohol that's going into our public representatives. You know, so I mean, they schmooze, and they're very, you know, they've got a lot of corporate money. They're very well refined in the message that they send out. Their message is very much on target. That's why they use words like receipts. They're very careful in all their talking points to use the you know, illusory stuff, the misleading language that would convince people that these are workable machines.
The closest thing we've come across to a smoking gun for Georgia is actually the person who brought Kathy Cox into statewide notice was a former Secretary of State by the name of Lewis Massey. Lewis Massey cherry-picked Kathy Cox out of the Georgia legislature to be his director of elections while he was Secretary of State. And
this is about 1996, and that's when...
It was in the 90s. And subsequently, Lewis Massey tried to run for the governor's office, and at that point, his protege, who had her profile raised by him, then ran for Secretary of State, and she won that office. Louis Massey lost in the Democratic primary to Roy Barnes, but immediately after that that governor's race had ended, Louis Massey began representing Diebold, which at that point was still known as Global Election Management Systems. And so he ended up coming back to his former employee with all their material, and so she was, I think, felt obligated to purchase equipment from him. In some notes that I saw while reviewing the materials for this lawsuit, it was clear that special notes were made next to the business cards of the those folks working with Louis Massey and representing GEMS and Diebold. Mm-hmm. But that's not quite a smoking gun, but it's a clue.
Right. They had a choice of a vastly superior electronic machine that actually printed out separate voter records, separated voter records that you could have used as the ballot of record. It was a vastly, it was a better interface. It was all smarter. It was a smaller company run by a couple of ethnic minority people out of Tennessee. But that system was rejected. We've got this guy presenting his system. You can see the superiority of it in a heartbeat, and it was shown to the legislators. You know, and the legislators in the and along with the 2001 Millennium Voting Commission that was set up to supposedly review these machines, they said they required paper ballots in their thing, and at the last minute there was pretty much a bait and switch pulled so that Kathy Cox could hire Louis Massey's clients to supply us with machines that produced no evidence. So it's a lot of corporate insider play going on. It's just, you know, you just open it up to that kind of corruption. That's what happens when you try to privatize essential, you know, services. You've got to add to your tax dollars. You got to add the profit margins for those companies and their greed motive, which is an invitation to all kinds of corruption. So that's really what it comes down to. I'm going to get back to a couple more points in the suit.
You want to pick a strong one, and we don't have all that much time.
Okay. We're doing good. We're doing
okay, because I want to get to some of the other things folks can do.
Okay.
As well as.
One, the other thing is you can look on OpenSecrets.com and Diebold gave a lot of money to Kathy Cox. But my question is, are there any states that you think are doing this well? Are there any states that do have a successful electronic process?
No. No. It's been shown the scanners are very, very vulnerable. Unless you have a manual audit of the paper, even, you know, you still have all kinds of holes in it. Scanners are better because you're dealing with paper evidence and trying to, you know, get an electronic record from the paper evidence. Okay, but there's a hack that was done by Hertzi
in Florida
within the last year and a half. Year and a half, 2 years ago that came out.
About 2 years ago.
And literally the programmer was able to take just the memory card, the thing that's supposed to store the votes, but it also has the program for reading the ballot. It has a ballot profile on it and a little bit of software on there that's supposed to be all, you know, closed and binary. It turns out it was like Visual Basic and it was interpreted. And that programmer was able to hack that card, you know, independent of touching the machine or doing anything else, just that memory card, slot that memory card, and he was able to make it record negative votes, basically. So you put in an equal number for yes, an equal number for no, and it came out with more yeses than nos. So, the question was that they used to test it was, can scanner voting machines be hacked? And the answer is yes, 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 and yes. So that's it. These other couple issues here, you can go to the site and read these counts, but these two issues here deal with the audit trail project, which is where Diebold has this audit trail machine. By the way, the processes for the state of Nevada, which uses all audit trail machines, we polled the election workers after the 2004 election when the state of Nevada went all electronic and all audit trail paper rolls from three different machine companies. They didn't want to look like they were doing a monopoly, so they actually had all three major machine companies provide them provide machines for the state. But we found in polling it that the election workers never got proper training, that most of the auditing that they were supposed to do in the polling place was never done. And then Diebold insists that if you're actually going to audit one of these paper rolls, you have to roll it out so you can see the entire paper roll from end to end. So they need a football field. Yeah, they need a football field to audit one of the paper rolls according to the processes that the voting machine companies put in place to do it. So again, they're making it very awkward. So these couple of counts challenge the problems with those voting machine rolls, including the accuracy and the speed with which the audits can be conducted. And also, they also found that most of the voters didn't pay attention to the paper trail, because that's not the ballot of record. The ballot of record is what's on their screen, so they're not encouraged to check the actual ballot. The thing that gets totaled in the end. And then there's been several that have come up during discovery, illegal acquisition, arguing about the machines and the way the machines came into our state, federal equal protection laws, some of the federal laws, and federal due process law that come in on that. So I've monopolized quite a bit of the time. I want to let John go off with his points. Is there any immediate question on the counts or the suit? That's voterga.org. Again, they're hearing oral arguments on this next Monday, 2:30 p.m. Federal court downtown Atlanta. So if you can,
and that's
listed
state,
be there.
As item number one on the back side of the sheet that I handed out. I'm sure not all of you are here from Georgia, but for those of you who are, or if you have friends here in Georgia, we need to fill that courtroom. And there's actually some 72 seats in that courtroom, so we'd like to get everyone out there. I know it's going to be an inconvenience for many folks who work 9 to 5, but there's a few things worth fighting for, and fair elections are certainly the top of my priority list, and I think of any person who values their freedom and the democratic process. Besides this great idea of Aaron's that everyone vote absentee, the paper I handed out discusses different programs that we can use to create more physical evidence of what actually transpires in one of these elections that are all electronic. And it's labor-intensive to do this, and we've actually also been, besides this lawsuit, we've been fighting to pass legislation. We've been lobbying lawmakers both federally and at the at the Georgia State House, as people have in many state houses across the country. And there are a number of great success stories that we've had in different states across the country. In California, for instance, there was such an uproar about the electronic systems being put into place that it became a campaign issue for their Secretary of State. And she ended up hiring a attorney from within the movement who'd successfully sued Diebold as her chief technical and legal officer to make certain that the systems used in California are up to the comply with state law. Now, they still have a lot of problems. In other states seem to have just better systems in place from the get-go, like New Hampshire, where they actually hand count paper ballots in about, let's say, 18% of their population base. and the rest of the state is optical scan. However, very interesting things came up during the New Hampshire primary this year in January. I'm not going to go into those, but if you look up Bev Harris in New Hampshire and in a search engine, that'll be you can see some fascinating video about how you can use old-fashioned dirty tricks to subvert a recount or an audit. However, that's much more labor-intensive, and essentially Bev Harris got the goods on them pulling a scam in that primary. Go ahead, Aaron.
Oh, I was just going to add, there's one other thing in California, and one of the, at least in my sister's counties, and the counties around Cupertino and Silicon Valley, where all the computer programmers work, I don't know that it's statewide for sure, probably is, you're allowed to vote on a paper ballot or request a paper ballot when you go to the polling place. So even though they're using Diebold zero evidence machines, you still have the right when you walk in a polling place, no, I want a paper ballot just by requesting it. So wherever there's computer professionals, you're gonna find some resistance to the totally the zero evidence electronic machines.
And to continue with the success stories, actually Maryland, which was almost as much of a monopoly as Georgia was with their Diebold systems, we were somewhat more monopolized than they were, but not by a significant amount. They last year voted to get rid of touchscreen voting machines, and this year the governor, under extreme public pressure, vowed to fund getting rid of those electronic machines, and I believe they will have optical scan machines in time for November this year. Interestingly, the governor's announcement came on the same day that a story broke that the former Maryland chair of the Republican Party, his trucking company was shipping the electronic voting machines from county headquarters to the individual polling places, and it's been shown that you can actually, in under 3 minutes, remove the screws from a machine, swap out the memory card, and load a viral vote rigging program into the any given voting machine, and then just screw it back together, and thus this could have transpired while the machines were being transported.
It's another chain of custody issue, which is a term you'll hear when you're talking about voting machines and voting systems. The chain of custody of the actual voting machines is really sloppy. They protect them with little plastic tie wraps, basically, and to you know, as like the evidence that they haven't been tampered with. And it really is absurd, because these machines sit in schools for days before the election, you know, at the precinct houses. We walked in and you know, tagged some that were sitting in the in one of the voting precincts down in Little Five Points, you know. And it's, you know, and It's just absurd, because that's where the actual, you know, software is waiting to be used, and they're totally accessible. In a matter of 3 minutes, you can swap out the program that the machine is counting with entirely, you know, on individual machines. But that's forgetting the point that there's total centralized computer counting at the end, you know, so the computer tabulation at the end can be very easily manipulated as well.
Yeah, it's really this story is just one more illustration of how, really, at every level, when you've got this equipment, it makes it easy to deny responsibility for problems. It's like, oh, someone could have accessed the machines while they were in the school waiting to be used, or the lack of security is incredible, and as a computer professional as well.
Lack of standard computer practices. I have a question here.
There's certainly no one in this room that understands there are problems with electronic voting machines. What I have a problem with is there needs to be something to advocate for. I mean, the purest system is a paper ballot that's counted in the precinct, tallied under public guise,
mm-hmm.
and the results are transmitted to the central office.
And that's what we advocate for.
But that system has certain flaws. Obviously,
yes.
We have disabled issues and other accessibility concerns.
Accessibility is one of the things that's really been used as a bludgeon to try and insert these machines. And the Diebold Corporation has provided, for instance, considerable funding to the National Association for the Blind.
National Federation for the Blind.
National Federation for the Blind. Yeah, $1 million grant for them. And they bought a lot of testimony from them on those issues. But computers can be used. You know, you're right.
Now, hear me out for a moment.
Okay.
As a person who's actually run for office, mm-hmm. that's a little more concern for me. We have to be able to control humans.
Mm-hmm.
People go into a precinct and they will write in the name of a person who's on the ballot and darken a square or whatever indication there is. That's called an overvote. That's
right.
Voting for the same person twice. That's a discarded ballot.
Yes.
So there are all sorts of problems with humans using mm-hmm. pieces of paper.
This is true.
The machines are supposed to solve that. Now, when I first started voting, there were machines in use in Georgia that you went into a room and you flipped a number of levers and you never got anything out of that. Somebody counted on the backside.
Right. That was one of the voting machines' doorways into the legislation that allowed those. It was later used to allow the electronic machines that don't produce any evidence either.
So we've had a fascination with machines for a long time.
Yes.
How do we break the machine cycle and advocate for going back to primitive ages when you marked a piece of paper?
We don't necessarily have to go back that far. Once you remove the control of the counting, the actual handling of the ballot by the software, in other words, I advocate the use of computers to deal with these accessibility issues, language issues. There's all kinds of things you can kind of solve with a better computer interface for voting. But as long as that computer produces a paper ballot, that's a ballot of record, then you remove the control of the corporation to say it, because every machine gets tested every time you vote on it. Every voter can go, hold it, that machine didn't report what I voted. That machine is broken, take it out of service. And so you can hold these companies accountable for the functioning of their machines. And you have a physical record now, you have all the documentation you need. So yeah, using computers to produce a paper ballot that is the ballot of record, that's the key. And then you follow that up with at least some minimal manual auditing, and the legislation that we've proposed in the state basically did that. But it's been shot down by the Republicans in the last session, and Democrats before that, so it just keeps getting shot down when we try to do it that way. That's why we have a lawsuit through Voter GA.
So what happens to the piece of paper generated by the computer?
The voter takes it, puts it in the ballot box, and then maybe another company that doesn't have to prove the validity of their recording machine goes in and produces a scanner that scans the ballots, and you get fast results. You deal with the immediacy issue. Scanners work very fast. It's not a hairy process. You got the voter validated their vote. They saw it. They put it in the box. They controlled it. That ballot box stays there. You count them in the precinct. So there's no like, oh, well, they put the ballot box in their trunk and stuffed it, or changed out, some of the votes or tore them up. You protect that chain of custody properly still. And then you just have some manual audits to follow that up to say, okay, the scanners did count the way that the people voted.
The way to build a better mousetrap, is there somebody building a better mousetrap? And if there isn't, why not you guys?
Funding? I'm not a big corporation.
There is a group that's out of California that's trying to put together a...
An open source
voting system that can be scanned. I'm not certain how well their progress is or how well they've been funded. I've not been checking up with them.
Right.
But open voting consortium.
Yeah, the open voting consortium, and they have a couple of projects going on. But the critical issue has never been providing better technology. There was better technology presented to the people to the legislators in Georgia. The voting machine I talked about, the True Vote system, okay, it was presented to them, and they weren't allowed to make a choice on that. Okay, they were kept from actually implementing the better system, even though their requirements said that that was the only system that actually qualified and met all their requirements. Okay, so it's not a matter of the physical engineering. If these voting companies didn't have the idea of protecting their greed, you know, and protecting their and installing a monopoly, if greed wasn't their motive, they were separated from that, and there was actually some market competition. And you could have market competition in machines that produced paper ballots very easily, you know. It's a matter of political engineering, not the physical engineering. And even if I were to make the best voting machine that does everything that I just talked about, you know, the best system in the world, you know, getting it installed through the political system is the challenge.
Which brings me to my points that I think take up much of this sheet that I've handed out. It's going to take citizen action across the country in order to first document the flaws in these systems and to get legislation passed. Even in Florida, Governor Charlie Crist caved to public pressure and has vowed to get rid of began getting rid of touchscreen voting. And recently in Sarasota, I don't know how many of you were following the fiasco there in Sarasota, but they switched over to optical scan equipment from Diebold, I believe, and I might have that wrong. It might have been ESNS, but I think they were using a Diebold to tabulate the votes from ESNS machines, and their tabulator at the county level just quit working, and thus they at least had those paper ballots that they could begin counting to show how people actually voted. And in Georgia, we don't have that that right, but at this point, well, we have the right, and that's why we have the lawsuit. But I just want to go over really quickly. There needs to be citizen involvement in order to beat this problem. We've trained people previously to be credentialed poll watchers. You sit in the polling place and look for anomalies, look for people getting frustrated with the equipment, and write reports on that. We get into the details, of course, in the class. And another a great program that's was out there is called Poll Workers for Democracy. I personally have worked as a poll worker. I encourage everyone to who isn't already tasked with doing something on election day that's election related to sign up as a poll worker and join Poll Workers for Democracy and write a report on what anomalies go on in your precinct, because you are going to have a much better idea as a poll worker than you ever will even as a credentialed observer.
As a credentialed observer, I got to as a credentialed observer through the Green Party because they had a candidate on the ballot. I was able to go to Gwinnett and observe the entire election process in 2004. And I can tell you that I think the people involved want to make an honest effort to conduct legitimate elections. It's just been short-circuited. And the only two people in the place, in fact, who would not give me the name were the two Diebold employees who handled and processed with their little machines with their screen facing away from the public, processed every vote that came out of Gwinnett that year. So, you know, the public officials are definitely open, and those absentee ballots, I can guarantee they make every effort to get them counted. When there are overvotes or mistakes, they have a panel of judges that go through and check those out. If the thing won't scan because it got folded wrong, or it's crumpled, or it's torn a little bit, they have a panel of judges that goes through to try and check every vote and make sure that it's there.
And another program that we've tried previously is parallel elections and voter affidavits. And this is actually very labor intensive, but this could actually prove precinct level vote fraud. And what it is you create Well, when you go to a polling place, you're essentially signing an affidavit that I am who I state that I am, and that I am qualified to vote in this election, and then you're handed the access card to use the voting machine. And we running parallel elections, create a very similar affidavit that states, I am who I say I am, I voted inside the polling place, and I am creating a replica ballot of how I voted inside on the voting machine. And thus we have people fill out paper ballots outside the polling place to reflect their votes on the inside. And we, just as a point to prove that you can total up a precinct's totals on election night, we would do those totals on the spot outside the precinct.
So we were out in the dark under a street lamp counting the ballots, and it did take us a few hours to get it done. First hour was probably agreeing on the process we were going to use, and then but we were counted and everything by 11 o'clock that night.
That's right.
So it took us 4 hours to count the precinct.
How different was your result from the precinct?
It matched, but interestingly, the machines, let's see, they had a new poll book thing for screening the voters. So we saw several voters get turned away because they were having poll book problems. And Diebold technicians came in early on early on in the day too, once they found out we were there.
Yeah, and while at that crucial moment when there was a person from the Secretary of State's office, which is rather unusual. As well as a Diebold tech come into that particular precinct, our credentialed monitor was absent from the interior of the precinct, this is speculation on my part, but they could have told the poll manager, we need to recalibrate the machines. And the Diebold tech or the Secretary of State person may have in good faith run some program on the machines that they thought was a calibration program, mm-hmm. but was actually a de-rigging program.
We had one other question here, and there's a gentleman who wants to take just a couple minutes to speak to everybody before we close out.
Okay. If by some chance the lawsuit goes through and these machines are determined not to be a legal method for voting between now and November.
Ain't going to happen in November. They've delayed the hearings to make sure that there will not be adequate time to handle the election in November in Georgia on that. So the best thing is to encourage you to vote absentee. Encourage all your friends to vote absentee. Help us get the word out. We're going to have some funding source available. Our goal is to put up a full page ad in the Journal Constitution with adequate time for people to vote absentee, basically stating what's in here. Probably a little bit kinder language than help dismantle the Diebold DRE dictatorship, but that we suffer from here in the state. This gentleman had just a couple minutes that he wanted to share with you. He's one of the from another group that's working for voting rights and protecting your voting rights. You want to come up and grab a mic, okay?
My name's Benjamin Kales. I'm with New York Democratic Lawyers Council and Council for Change. We're going to be fielding an army of attorneys on election day to deal with election protection related issues. And I'm just here to encourage you strongly encourage you to join one of the sides of the campaign, and specifically the Obama campaign, doing election protection on election day. You'll have an opportunity to directly call in whatever's going on. We'll be tracking what's going on in all 50 states. On a state-by-state level, so that when it's one polling site with a broken machine, okay, that may not be something, but when it's every single machine throughout the state, then we have an idea of what's going on. We can respond properly, we can file the proper litigation, we can bring it to the needed attention as the Obama campaign, and really do some work to make this place a better place.
Yeah, if nothing else, the Obama campaign is getting a lot of people involved. I know that his speech at the convention convinced two young voters that are friends of my daughter's that had never registered and bothered to vote to go ahead and do that. And hopefully it's doing that. They want you to not be involved. They want you to not vote. They want you to get frustrated with these blockades they're putting to your right to vote. Don't get frustrated. Fight back. I mean, it's time to take back this country. That's all there is to it, is take back our democracy.
Maybe a silly question, but is McCain campaigning anything to make sure everything
is,
you know?
He knows. Yeah.
Well, I can't really speak for McCain, but I will tell you what happened earlier this year in Congress with a crucial bill that even some factions of different voting integrity organizations across the country, they all got behind this bill, H.R. 5036, which was to mandate the provision of paper ballots nationwide. And the bill actually was sponsored by a Democrat, had hundreds of Democratic co-sponsors and a significant number of Republican co-sponsors, so much so that the Democratic Majority Leader, Steny Hoyer, put the bill to vote under a special rule where it would there wouldn't be any debate, or there'd be minimal debate, and the bill would pass with two-thirds, with a two-thirds majority. And what actually transpired was the morning of the vote for 5036, the Bush White House sent out an alert stating that this bill must be killed. And a very significant number of the Republican co-sponsors did not vote for the bill that they had co-sponsored based on George Bush's attempt to influence the bill. But worse yet, though, Steny Hoyer, majority leader, has not called for another hearing on that bill. And you could say that both he and Dianne Feinstein have really been doing their best to subvert reform on the Democratic side, and there's been, you know, plenty of subversion going on from certain Republicans. But there are a number that I've spoken to, both on the federal congressional level and at the state level, who really want fair elections. So
yeah.
I'd like to hear from the McCain campaign. I'm sure we will, but I don't have any faith until I see something in writing.
We got to wrap, so this will be the very last question.
Just to point out, Aaron and I are about as poor opposite as you can get politically,
mm-hmm.
and we both completely agree on what we have to do to get voting mechanisms straightened out.
Yeah. We've run polls, you know, asking which is the better, more likely to produce a legitimate democracy, whether it's zero evidence electronic voting or physical paper ballots, and across the board we get, you know, 80-90% response, and it doesn't matter about partisanship or anything. The people understand this, but they've been you know, drilled to be apathetic about it. They've made the, you know, the political process has been made so ugly for so long that people just don't want to be involved anymore, and we need to turn that around. And that's the only thing that's going to really change this, is the political engineering. It's not a matter of, you know, the software engineering. One last thought?
I would just like to reiterate that if you can do one thing for your country, take Election Day off, come to a training, work as a parallel election poll worker.
Learn about the process, yeah. Get involved somewhere.
Create evidence that we may need if this lawsuit doesn't win this coming Monday. We by collecting affidavits of what goes wrong, by observing the process, by running parallel elections, by collecting precinct totals, we can create evidence that hopefully isn't needed, because we'll win on the first round this suit, but might well be needed in case this suit is prolonged. So please contact me, or and I've got extra copies of this handout. Send us around. And
we're on the web. Our email's on everything. You can get a hold of us, you know.
That's right.
And if you've got other questions, please feel free to, you know, ask them an email or maybe outside afterwards. We got to clear the room. I believe the next thing that's up is the viewing of the... The right to count. If you're still curious about how these things got installed in Georgia, the right to count documents a lot of the political hearings, the hearings that were held, and things like that to defend these machines when we were making the fight to get at least a paper audit trail attached to them. And so it's an interesting look inside the political process. And again, it's political engineering here, so it's good information. A good film to watch, and you'll see me and John in it.
Which is actually the worst reason to watch it. It's a great film, but
yeah.
Despite us being in it, please consider sticking around to watch the film.